Israeli strikes house in central Gaza city, taking the lives of over 24 Palestinians. Regime forces also conduct a new raid in the occupied West Bank, killing 2 Palestinians, including a resistance commander. And Iran says Israel's attack on its Syria embassy violated the immunity of diplomatic premises and necessitates legitimate defense to punish the aggressor. The Israeli military's relentless attacks on Gaza continue to claim more civilian lives. At least 25 people were killed when a home in central Gaza city was targeted in the regime's fresh bombardments. Another 20 civilians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in other parts of the coastal sliver. More than 33,500 people have so far been killed in Gaza since Israel began its genocidal campaign on October 7th. And thousands are still missing and presumed buried under rubble. A Geneva-based human rights organization has estimated over 13,000 Gazans are unaccounted for. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says many of those missing are either under rubble or buried in indiscriminate mass graves. And earlier we spoke to our Gaza correspondent for an update, Muti Abu Musabe from the central city of Deir al-Balah.
Gaza City was under heavy bombardments over the last 24 hours. At least 4 residential buildings were destroyed to the ground by the intense Israeli airstrikes that were concentrated against a Zaytun neighborhood and a Daraj neighborhood at the same time. In the meantime, as you can see, as you know, that the Israeli warplanes also intensified their attacks against the central area of Gaza Strip. The Israeli artillery shelling has never stopped for a while since yesterday. So far, in addition to the continuous airstrikes that are still hitting the residential buildings and the houses, particularly in the northern part of Anusarat refugee camp, where the Israeli military announced the beginning of a limited ground offensive against that area. We can say that this area, particularly Al-Mughraga neighborhood and Al-Zahra neighborhood, they are subjected to heavy bombardments amid fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces. According to multiple eyewitnesses, the Israeli occupation forces detonated several residential buildings, like what happened in Khan Yunis city and in Gaza city and in the northern part of Gaza Strip. Dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings and houses were detonated and blasted using the explosive devices by the Israeli occupation forces. We are talking about a catastrophic situation right now in the northern part of Gaza, in the northern part of Anusarat refugee camp, knowing that this area and that camp is completely overcrowded and overwhelmed with the Palestinian evacuees and the displaced Palestinians who were forcibly expelled out of their residential buildings and neighborhoods in Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip.
Israel continues to target aid workers trying to deliver life-saving assistance to people in Gaza. In a recent incident, a UNICEF car came under fire on its way to deliver aid to northern Gaza, where malnutrition has already claimed the lives of dozens of children. Let's take a listen to UNICEF spokesperson explaining how this attack happened.
I was in that car that was hit. It was waiting at a holding point just south of the Wadi Gaza checkpoint, where we are often instructed to wait before being called through the checkpoint. We were waiting there as instructed, and gunfire broke out in the vicinity. It seemed to be coming from the direction of the checkpoint towards civilians, who then turned and fled from the checkpoint. Luckily, myself and my colleagues, we were all safe, but this just underscores how dangerous it is for humanitarian aid workers in Gaza at the moment, that incidents like this continue to happen when they absolutely shouldn't. See, we decided to go ahead because it was such a critical mission, with nutrition products for the children who are malnourished in the north of Gaza, among other things. Unfortunately, after deciding that we would go ahead, we were still delayed. We waited at that holding point for at least another 2 hours before deciding that the mission was no longer feasible because we didn't have enough time, even if we were given the green light, to go up, conduct all of our activities, and then get. It's tragic to see anybody suffering from malnutrition, which is such a painful condition, let alone in a place where malnutrition was almost non-existent before October. It's now skyrocketed in the north of Gaza because of disruptions to food production, but also because of restrictions on aid access to that area. We've really struggled to get up there with aid. And as a result, we know that children are dying of malnutrition there. At least 23 children have reportedly died at the Kamal Adwan Hospital, which is where we were trying to bring these nutrition treatments on Tuesday.
Hamas Political Bureau Chief says interests of the Palestinian people are placed ahead of everything else in the ceasefire talks with Israel. Ismail Haniyeh made the comment when he was asked if killing of his sons and grandchildren in Israeli airstrike will impact negotiations.
The interests of the Palestinian people are placed ahead of everything, and our sons and children are part of these people and part of the journey. What sets the tones of the resistance in the field and politics is the response of the Israeli occupation to the demands which we stick to, and on top of it are the permanent ceasefire, the complete withdrawal and return of displaced.
Haniyeh said Israel is still putting off and evading a response to the movement's demands. He also denied Israeli claims his sons were fighters in the resistance movement, saying the regime resorts to lies to justify its crimes. Negotiations on a ceasefire, which would also include a deal on Israeli captives in Gaza, have been underway in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, since Sunday. A senior Hamas official says the group needs a ceasefire to have enough time to locate Israeli hostages held across Gaza and ascertain their fate. Bassem Naim said the captives are held in different parts of Gaza, and some of them, and by different groups, and some are even under rubble, killed alongside other Palestinians during Israeli strikes. That's a known fact. The casualties caused by U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide in Gaza are much higher than official figures. And now a Geneva-based human rights organization estimates over 13,000 Gazans are still missing in the besieged territory, many of them presumed dead. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says many of those missing are either buried under rubble or been buried in indiscriminate mass graves. The rights organization says Israel has not disclosed identities of hundreds of Gazans it's abducted, adding some of them have been killed in the regime's prisons as well. Says there's also been no independent probe to confirm or determine the details of their deaths. The Euromed noted its estimate is based on initial reports of missing people, and the true number is likely higher. It called on the international community to defend Palestinian civilians against Israel's genocide in Gaza and hold the regime accountable for its crimes. Israeli raids in the occupied territories have become daily occurrence since regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza back in early October. Israeli forces have killed two Palestinians in a fresh raid in northeastern West Bank. Our Ramallah correspondent joined us earlier with your details.
This morning, Israeli forces had stormed the town of Al-Fari'a refugee camp, as well as Tobas and Tammun. These areas that the Israeli forces had been storming on a daily basis, let's say, in the last few days, when the Israelis are claiming that a Palestinian opened fire at Israeli, vehicles and wounded a soldier and two settlers. Since then, the Israeli forces are searching for the Palestinian who carried out the shooting. Of course, the Israelis don't have an excuse, or don't need an excuse, to raid Palestinian areas, because they storm Palestinian areas on a daily basis. Anyway, during the military raid to Al-Fari'a, a refugee camp south of Tobas, Israeli forces opened fire at Palestinians there, killed at least one Palestinian, Mohammed Issam al-Shahmawi, and wounded three more Palestinians. In addition to killing one Palestinian and wounding three others, the Israeli forces opened fire at Palestinian paramedics and ambulances in order to prevent them from transferring the wounded to the hospitals. And the Israeli soldiers had arrested a Palestinian paramedic while he was driving the or while he was inside the ambulance transferring one of the wounded Palestinians to the hospital. The Israeli forces opened fire at the ambulance. They stopped it and they arrested one of the crews of the Palestinian ambulance. At the end of the day, the total number of the Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October and since the start of the genocidal war on the Gaza Strip rises today to 461 Palestinians had been killed across the occupied West Bank.
Iran says Israel's recent attack on its embassy in Syria, which violated the immunity of diplomatic missions, necessitates legitimate defense with the objective of punishing the aggressor. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in separate phone calls with his German, British, and Australian counterparts. He stressed that punishment is necessary as Israel has shown total disregard for international law and the Vienna Conventions, while the UN Security Council has failed to condemn this act of terror. Iran's top diplomat said the only way to restore peace to the region is to end Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza. He also urges counterparts to explicitly condemn Israel's terrorist attack. Amir Abdollahian said controlling Israel's warmongering and its deranged leaders is a prerequisite for sustainable security in West Asia. He stressed Iran is now seeking escalation of hostilities in the region. Iranians have marked end of the holy month of Ramadan by performing Eid al-Fitr rituals and taking part in mass prayers. But celebrations this year were overshadowed by ongoing onslaught on Gaza. Yusumisha Ahmadi has your story.
Eid, but no Eid. Marking the end of the holy month of Ramadan with the same rituals, but definitely not the same festive mood. Iranians observing Eid al-Fitr by taking part in mass prayers as always. Nonetheless, this year, the ongoing genocidal war in Gaza on their minds and sharing videos of Gaza on an occasion that is one of the most important holidays on the Islamic calendar.
We will always support our brothers and sisters in Palestine. The Zionists should know that they are not alone. All it takes is a word from our leader and we will be ready to fight.
I hope that our presence today sends a strong message that we will always back Palestine.
The Zionists are not human. How can they commit such atrocities while the whole world is watching? The pictures coming out of Gaza and the situation there are shocking.
We will always support the Palestinians. We always have. And today I brought my two daughters as a message to the mothers in Gaza that we will always be there for them no matter what. This also became the main theme of the leader's Eid al-Fitr address as he strongly criticized Islamic governments that have not cut ties with and support the Zionist regime.
Eid al-Fitr is supposed to be a happy occasion, but this year Iranians are not happy because of the ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. Yusumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Millions of Muslims across India have also observed Eid al-Fitr by offering special prayers for Palestinians in Gaza amid unrelenting Israeli atrocities. Manawar Zaman reports.
Millions of Indian Muslims have marked the end of the fasting month of Ramadan with Eid al-Fitr. In India's capital, New Delhi, large congregations gathered for the morning prayers at major mosques across the city. A local resident there told me the message of Islam is love, affection, and humanity. He said he had dedicated his prayers to the Palestinians in Gaza, who are witnessing Israeli brutalities on a daily basis.
We pray to Allah to give more patience to Palestinians. The situation they are facing is unfortunate, but they are brave people who have time and again proved that the most powerful countries in the world can't break their resolve. They are determined to fight for their right to their land and stand against injustice with a strong faith. Let's pray collectively and hope this day brings an end to their miseries.
Eid was celebrated on Wednesday in the densely Muslim populated state of Kerala, Ladakh and Kashmir, where worshippers held exclusive prayers for the people of Gaza while emphasizing the unity of Muslims across the globe.
I urge the entire Muslim community around the world to pray fervently for the people of Palestine who have faced tremendous injustice and oppression. Allah is sufficient for them, no matter how hard the oppressors cause them pain and harm. They should not lose their faith in God. They will emerge victorious sooner or later, since they are fighting against injustice and for a virtuous cause.
Muslims in India reminded the world of their commitment to the Palestinian cause and stressed the importance of collective responsibility and compassion. In recent weeks, activists and rights groups in India have expressed outrage over the UN's failure to stop the Israeli genocide. They called for an all-out economic boycott against Israel to end the regime's brutalities against the Palestinians in Gaza.
Since the beginning of Israeli genocide in Gaza, protest gatherings have been barred in India. Many mosque imams have also been warned not to mention Palestine in their ceremonies by the law enforcement agencies. Islamic scholars say praying for the victims of oppression is an integral part of Islamic belief. They condemn the Western attitude to regime's genocide as hypocrisy, urging for an end to bloodshed. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Only through Shia Sunni unity and unity in the axis of resistance can Palestine be free from the river to the sea. And the day is not far when they will pray together at Al-Aqsa Mosque. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more.
Press TV wrote, this year's International Quds Day saw millions of people across the Islamic Republic of Iran pour into the streets to reaffirm their unwavering support and solidarity for the people of Palestine. Emotions were high as people rallied to condemn the Zionist regime's genocidal war against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip, which has already claimed the lives of more than 33,000 people. Amid the hustle and bustle of the annual rally in Tehran, two familiar faces wore the cynosure of all eyes as they walked together to mark the day that was instituted by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, more than four decades ago. They demonstrated in action what the great revolutionary leader strongly advocated: unity against the common enemies, the American hegemony and the Zionist apartheid. The sight of Abu Fadak, the chief of staff of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, PMF, and the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Ziad al-Nakhale, marching side by side in Tehran, strongly reflected the reality of how far the legacy of late Imam Khomeini has reached. That too on International Quds Day and in the Iranian capital, where it all began in 1979. The rare public appearance of Abu Fadak, a highly respected Iraqi Shia military strategist, and al-Nakhale, a prominent Palestinian Sunni resistance leader, sent a powerful message to enemies. Islamic Republic of Iran, with its predominantly Shia population, has withstood a myriad of economic hardships, crippling sanctions, and acts of terrorism and sabotage for its pivotal role in supporting Palestine, with its predominantly Sunni population, against Zionist American plots. One of the plots has been to divide Sunni and Shia Muslims in a bid to consign the issue of Palestine and the occupation of Islam's third holiest site in occupied Al-Quds into oblivion. However, owing to the wisdom and bravery of the Iranian nation led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, all such nefarious plots have been nipped into the bud. These failed plots have been for years evident in countries such as Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, but more importantly in Palestine, where the axis of resistance with its Sunni and Shia members have together been fighting the Israeli-American war against Palestinians. Abu Fadak and Nakhale are both designated as terrorists by the terrorist regime in Washington. Their crime has been advocating armed resistance against Zionist terrorism and colonialism. Abu Fadak led the PMF following the U.S. assassination of its former leader, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, alongside Iran's top anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani, outside the Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. The predominantly Shia PMF, presented by all the religious and ethnic groups in Iraq, played an instrumental role in defeating the West-backed Daesh terrorist group in Iraq. The predominantly Sunni PIJ is a powerful resistance movement in the blockaded Gaza Strip, which together with Hamas has forced the Israeli regime and its military to eat humble pie. The leaders of the two resistance groups walking shoulder to shoulder on the streets of Tehran for the same cause is a clear representation of Sunni-Shia unity. When taking into account how the beliefs and principles of these two men strongly match those of the late Imam Khomeini, this awe-inspiring demonstration of unity in the axis of resistance from Palestine to Iraq, from Shia to Sunni, united against the common enemy, the axis of genocide, was a statement in itself. This unity in letter and spirit is what will pave the way for the victory of the oppressed against the oppressor. It is an image that has given shudders to the US, the Anglo-American Zionist apologies. those who have openly betrayed the Palestinian cause, such as the Al Khalifa monarchy ruling over the oppressed people of Bahrain, will be shaken by the sight of two resistance linchpins together. This united stance, which is growing stronger by the day as a result of the genocidal war on Gaza, spells the beginning of the end for those aiding the Zionist occupation. The irony is that the US and the UK in particular, who declare themselves as the leaders of the free world and democracy, share close ties with the Al Khalifa regime and ilk. While more than 16,000 Palestinian children have been martyred in the past 6 months, thousands have been rendered hopeless, and many more are starving. State TV in Bahrain has had rolling coverage on everything except Gaza. The slaughter of Palestinians has no news value for them. Real-life heroes such as Abu Fadak and Nakhale have seen their popularity grow over the past 6 months as they have refused to cow down against the occupying regime. On the other hand, those Muslim Arab leaders who betrayed the people of Gaza during their hour of need will soon be forgotten and consigned to the bins of history books. Abu Fadak and Nakhale earned their freedom after years of struggle and resistance. They represent a growing number of like-minded people of resistance who have mutual respect for each other. The leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has repeatedly emphasized the need for mutual respect between the Shia and Sunni and their leaders as the key to foiling foreign plots, freeing Palestine from occupation, and ushering in regional peace and security. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah Resistance Movement, predominantly Shia but includes Sunni members also, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has followed suit by supporting the people of Gaza. This support stretches back decades before Hezbollah's latest operations in the aftermath of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm and the genocidal Zionist war on Gaza. It is not surprising that the Palestinians in Gaza, who are 99% Sunni, have regularly praised the axis of resistance, a growing Shia-Sunni axis, and on top of them, the Islamic Republic of Iran, after defeating the Israeli occupation forces in numerous wars over the past two decades. Only through this Shia-Sunni unity and unity in the axis of resistance can Palestine be free, from the river to the sea. And the day is not far when they will pray together at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Doing us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza has been described as a living hell on earth, with a deafening Western silence regarding the Israeli genocide of Gazans and active U.S. arms supply deals that contribute to the murder of more civilians, like the sons of Hamas Political Bureau Chief Ismail Haniyeh. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the duplicitous role that the U.S. is playing, the losses of IOF regime forces, and how Israel continues to dodge the ceasefire deal with excuses with the intent to prolong the aggression. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. Hossein Abu Qaiti is an activist and political commentator joining us from Sana'a. Also joining us is Sakina Datouf, journalist, author, and producer from London. Welcome to you both. I'll start with you first, Hossein Abu Qaiti. And I'd like to get your thoughts on what the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has said, where he said the U.S. does not have any evidence of Israel committing a genocide in Gaza. He told that to a Senate committee just this past Tuesday. And yet, just before that, matter of days before that, he admitted that 25,000 women and children have actually been killed, of which 14,000 of them are children, which means every hour four children have been killed. How could he say that, admit to that, but say that a genocide is not taking place?
I mean, we don't know what does genocide means in the United States. I mean, genocide means is exactly what's happening in Gaza. I mean, hundreds of thousands of civilians has been killed or injured. An entire city has been flattened. I mean, the entire world population have gone in their millions to the street condemning the Israeli genocide. The United Nations has called for stopping this genocide. Amnesty International, Oxfam, and Human Rights Watch have condemned the Israeli attack and killing of civilians, especially children. More than 16,000 children have been killed. I mean, the United States actually, because it's the one that's actually supplying all the weapons, all type of weapons, to the United States, as the Secretary of Defense has admitted about a month ago or more than a month, when he said, admit that 25,000 civilians has been killed, most of them children, and he said that they have supplied Israel with more than 25,000 guided bombs. So those weapons actually, and the help of the United States, if it was not given to the Israeli regime, they will not be able to conduct a war against the Palestinian people for more than a month. But why the United States is saying so, and this is not a genocide? Because if they say this is a genocide, this means that they are condemning themselves, because they are really and directly involved in this war against the Palestinian people. And as well, on the top of that, they have tried and they are actually have attacked Yemen dozens of times to stop Yemeni blockade, which has actually not allowed any Israeli ship to go to any ports of the occupied Palestine. So United States crimes has been done throughout the existence of the United States. We've seen what they done in Vietnam, in Afghanistan, and all around the world, and as well in Iraq with this lie about chemical weapons. Just imagine, millions of Iraqis has been killed or injured. Millions has been displaced. But what happened at the end? They couldn't find any proof of those weapons in Iraq. But has anyone actually brought to court? Has anyone even apologized of what had happened? But what the United States actually is doing, they will wait maybe for 50 years, and they will actually say that that they were wrong, and they will apologize exactly what happened when they have thrown a nuclear bomb in Hiroshima and in Nagasaki during World War II. What I mean, they only admitted their mistake and as well apologized for those nuclear attacks only during Obama when he was in office. So a United States, all Arab nations actually should actually stand with the Palestinians, because what's happening now, it shows how Israeli is really, really weak, and if the Palestinian people, and they will, I believe they will continue with attack from Yemen and all the resistance with forming blockade against Israel in any area, any Muslim country can do, I believe that Israeli existence will start to vanish.
Yeah, well, Sakina, too, our guest there is from Yemen, and we shouldn't be that surprised, in a sense, where we look at the nine-year-old war that was executed on Yemen by Saudi Arabia and its allies, with the majority of the weapons dropped there to be U.S. weapons, which killed many children. That war, I believe, had 400,000-plus casualties. And we're seeing a genocide unfold in the Gaza Strip, again, with U.S. weapons. What type of role is the U.S. playing in this genocide? I mean, on the outside, they show concern and compassion for the civilians that are getting murdered. But we know that they are approving these military sales, and some say it appears to be every other day that a license is granted for delivery of these arms to the Israeli regime.
The reality is America cannot do anything else. The U.S. is complicit 100% in the genocide that's going on right now in Gaza, but also in the wars that have happened in the past in the region, including Yemen. So, I mean, it is obvious that because these are America's wars that they are having other countries fight for them. So they cannot say anything else. We really cannot expect anything else from them. However, the evidence is out there. What has really changed at the moment with the war in Gaza is that they used to be able to control the narrative before. And, you know, when they say things like showed false compassion or talked about, you know, feeling sorry for things that were not good, people bought into the story. What happens now is now everything is being laid out and nobody believes what they say anymore. However, they have to keep this up because now and then they are hoping that people will forget, that there will be a lapse of understanding, and in between they will keep on plugging, reminding people that, oh, it's not a genocide, you know, these things happen in a war. But right now, whatever they do, I think, is not holding any water. The genocide is obvious. The world is watching it live. The pictures that we are seeing, the atrocities that we are witnessing, I mean, I think they are really, it is going against them when they make statements such as this, saying it's not a genocide. It is them who are becoming the laughing stock of the world when they keep denying what is obvious.
On a military perspective, there was a recent report, there's many reports that have come out. One of them is compiled by Israel itself and Israeli officials, where veteran combat officers have cited the fact that from a military perspective, Israel is losing. And basically it's saying, first of all, that in the best case scenario, Hamas cannot be defeated until the year 2026 or 2027. An interesting development was the fact that the Israeli military announced the withdrawal from its regime forces in the southern Gaza Strip in Khan Yunis, of which many took that as a sign of perhaps Israeli regime forces being defeated. We also know that a few hundred Israeli regime forces have been killed. Why is it that they are still continuing with a genocidal war where they're losing and not coming to the negotiating table and to come up with to agree to a ceasefire?
I mean, the reason behind that, at the beginning, that they thought that this war on Gaza will take only a matter of weeks, and they thought that it will force Hamas either to surrender or to let the prisoners, the Israeli people that and military in the hand of Hamas, but what happened is was actually the opposite. We are now are entering the 7th month of this war, but the thing behind their failure and their insistence to continue, even though they failed, is because what happened in 7 October has actually hit Israeli regime really hard, because the existence of Israel was about that safe. Is a safe country for all Jewish people from around the world, from any country, any Jewish can come to Israel. He will be given a Palestinian land, a Palestinian house. He will be given a support from the Israeli regime. But what happened? There are hundreds of thousands of Israeli around Gaza have fled their cities, have fled all area around Gaza, and as well in the north of Palestine, after Hezbollah started attacking in support of the Palestinian people, hundreds of thousands as well has gone under the ground or have left those cities and villages. And what has actually added more pressure on Israel is the blockade that was formed by Yemen, and as well the attack on Eilat, which have stopped that port. And as well, they thought that only Eilat city was one of the last of the safe place in Israel, but actually it was the opposite, because Yemeni have targeted those area. So this actually 7 October has made Israel is not safe. And there are reports that there are tens of thousands of Jews in Israel have left, because they can go to any country because they have another nationality. That's why Israel actually is trying to continue, because they think they might break Hamas, they think they might force other Arab countries to help them or stopping aid from coming to Gaza. Okay. And actually, it's totally the opposite. And the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance is still attacking and continue attacking Israel from the beginning of those attacks.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Taking a look at a motion that has been put forward to the UN, it's Palestine's membership, Sakina Datu, to review the Palestinian Authority's application of a full member state for Palestine. Now, we know that that has happened before, but the biggest obstacle that stands in that is the U.S. and its veto. The U.S. is insisting on the fact that there needs to be a negotiated solution with Palestine and the Palestinian Authority before the application should be processed. Why does the U.S. insist on that? Why can't Palestine become a U.N. member and then for negotiations to take place, you think?
I think it's because they have to ensure that whatever negotiations happen, they have control of the Palestinian Authority. So whoever is going to lead Palestine should be their puppets and should really be speaking for them and then admit Palestine if they were to. Because at the moment, they are not sure who is going to be leading the process. And obviously, that it doesn't go in their interest. And they will not support it. They will keep vetoing it unless in the same way that they have put their puppet governments in other parts of the Middle East. That's basically what they are waiting for. The moment they can control people in authority in Palestine, that's when they probably will stop vetoing and allowing Palestine to be part of the UN.
Taking a look at the defeat that Israel is facing, Hossein Abu Khaiti, on the ground there in the Gaza Strip. We also know that it is involved in military skirmishes with Hezbollah when it comes to the southern part of Lebanon and the northern part of occupied Palestine. We also know that the Islamic Resistance of Iraq is targeting Israel quite often. Actually, in the past 2 weeks, it has increased its attacks on the occupied Palestine and the Israeli regime. And of course, we now look at another front, possibly, with Israel attacking the Iranian consulate in Syria, where Iran has vowed retaliation. Many say that Israel can't be extended on so many fronts. What do you think? Do you think that Israel is going to be able to handle all of these military engagements on so many different areas?
I mean, I know that they will not be able. I mean, they couldn't even handle the resistance in Gaza. They only use carbot bombing, and even though those area is still having much resistance and much attack against Israel by launching missiles from those area that was carbot bombed. But of course, you know, I believe that this is actually the first step for the defeat of Israel, because they don't know what to do. And they think they want actually to show that they still have the power when they target the Iranian embassy or when they target area in Lebanon, and they are sending threat all around them that they will continue in Gaza, because they are weak and they don't want to lose that. And but I believe that Iranian response, it will be soon, because what the Israeli did is a kind of attack against Iran. But of course, this is the decision is in the hand of the Iranian government, and they are actually the one who really knows how to deal with the Zionist state. But I believe if Israel could be defeated in a matter of month, of all Arab countries will cut ties with them. I mean, just imagine, Yemeni army have formed a blockade in the Red Sea, and what Israeli regime has done with the United Arab Emirates, they are allowing ship to go to United Arab Emirates, and then all the goods or what's needed to Israel is going all through United Arab Emirates, Saudi and Jordan. This shows actually that Yemeni blockade is successful, but as well shows that the Israeli actually, they are dependent, their lifeline is in country around them. And I believe if Turkey as well will cut all its ties, I believe at that point Israeli will be so weak. And if they know that they could actually handle all those countries, I mean, we have seen they didn't actually, they were sending threat to Hezbollah. If Hezbollah will continue attack, they will might invade, they will might, you know, bomb the entire country. But what they did, actually, they only a small response against Hezbollah, because they know if they actually cross the red line that was actually set by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, they know that Hezbollah attack will not be only to respond against Israel, but actually it will be the start of the liberation of occupied Palestine.
We need to talk about the ceasefire talks, Sakina, that too. And it's very interesting, one of the sad developments of this past day was that on Eid al-Fitr, you had the assassination of three of the sons of Ismail Haniyeh, political bureau chief of Hamas. And he came out and he said, even though that's happened, my sons were there. It's not going to stop us from not pursuing the ceasefire talks. Where at this point, I'm not even sure where it stands, because we're having Israel not being sincere in wanting for that to happen. What do you think is preventing Israel from, coming out with a solution, or agreeing to the solutions that are put forward, the provisions that have been put forward by Hamas? It seems like they want this to drag out. That's one assessment being made here.
I think there are two different things. I think number one, it is Netanyahu himself who definitely wants to drag this, because his political career depends on this, and he knows that when the war comes to an end, you know, he's got a lot of charges to answer to. So in his own personal interest to ensure that this war continues and goes on, because that's his survival. So there is one aspect of that. But the other aspect of Israel in general, I mean, if they were to accept a ceasefire right now, what are they going to say to their people and to the world? What have they achieved from killing that many people, from committing a genocide? There isn't even one, success story that they can give to their own people. So they have not achieved anything. And I think the reason why they are delaying is in the hope that they might just be able to do few things, like, for example, assassinate the sons of the leader of Hamas and then claim that they have achieved something. I think it's a struggle. It's like a wounded animal. Israel right now is just literally hitting everywhere because they just don't know where to go. It's like someone gone crazy and gone mad, and dealing with these kind of people is atrocious, because you just don't know. And I think at the moment there is also the factor of Iran. I mean, here in the West, in the UK, there are so many speculations, but what that reveals is the fear that exists about what Iran is now going to do and how they're going to retaliate after the strike. And I think even if Israel, for them moving away from Gaza, southern Gaza at the moment, is because they are expecting some kind of a retaliation. And you can see the fear. I mean, Israel at the moment really has lost everything, all sorts of military, psychological, all sorts of warfare. And I think they are not going to accept a ceasefire because they have nothing to show for what they've done.
Indeed. Well, maybe you can help us, Hossein El-Bukhaiti, figure out what the U.S. President Joe Biden is, what is his approach is. I mean, it's quite perplexing. You know, he comes out and he criticizes, at least that's what the reports say, criticizes Netanyahu. He says Israel's approach is a mistake. And I'm going to quote him. He urged Netanyahu, quote, to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into occupied Palestine. But he's the one that's providing Israel with military arms. So what is the U.S. stance here? Can you maybe clarify that for us if you can?
Criticism from Biden to Netanyahu just for the use for the media, like they want to show that they are angry with what the Israeli is doing, and it's actually a clear proof that they know exactly what's happening, and that is what's happening is a genocide. But on the other hand, when he asked Netanyahu or requesting for a ceasefire for 6 months, it's the United States who's actually blocking by vetoed many resolutions from the from the Security Council. I mean, if he really wants a ceasefire before calling up to Netanyahu, he should actually stop vetoing any call for ceasefire, stop the supplies of weapons. But as well, when he's calling for ceasefire, you see that they are as well requesting the Palestinian resistant to release all of the prisoner of war. But he has not request from Israel to actually release the hostage that they have been taken from Palestine. And it's not actually the war against Gaza. It's not about 7th of October. It's not about the existence of Hamas in Gaza. Hamas was actually elected. We see what's happening in the West Bank. The authority was recognized there by the United Nations, by the United States, and as well UN Security Council, and as well by Israel. And they have recognized Israel. And what's happening actually there? There is no Hamas. Israel has been actually taking lands, has been killing people, has been taking hostages, for many, many years. So United States as well now is actually close to the election. That's why I believe that Biden actually will do whatever it takes to help Israel, and I believe he will increase his help to Israel, because we know that the lobbyist in the United States is controlled by the Zionist state. That's why I didn't see any resolution, only by the resistance to continue their attack. And as well, I believe if Yemeni will extend their attack to target those Israeli ships in the Persian Gulf to stop them from delivering goods to Dubai and then toward Israel, as well by targeting Israeli ship in the Mediterranean Sea. And I believe that the Yemeni army is capable of that, and as well the resistant, and as well I believe that Iran, if they will conduct any attack in response toward Israel, I believe that Israel will actually rethink about what they have done, and they will stop immediately.
All right, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Hossein Abokhaiti, activist and political commentator from Sana'a. Sakina Datu, thank you. Journalist, author, and producer from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitawe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT-5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة وموضع الرسالة ومختلف الملائكة.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety. This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal ma'rifah.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book,
the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.